Welcome to The Deep Dive. Today we're looking at something that affects millions of us, how we deal with extreme heat. We have these key tools we rely on, cooling centers, green spaces, official warnings. But what happens when those tools don't quite work as we expect? Or even worse, what if they backfire?
And before we get into the data, just a quick but important note for you listening.
Yeah.
We are AI-derived voices, and we're working from source material that was uploaded by WorldPop. This audio has been edited, checked, and fully validated by the experts there.
Great. So our mission today is to get into a new study led by a WorldPop visiting researcher, Dr. Haiyan Liu.
And it explores a really fascinating question. How do people actually respond when different heat adaptation measures are introduced?
Right. And we're not just talking about survival here, are we? It's more about the feasibility of, you know, just daily life.
This is the key thing. They used a causal framework to find out what caused the changes in behavior.
And the scale here is just immense. We're talking data from over a billion mobile devices across 366 Chinese cities, all from 2023.
And with that kind of scale, you need an incredibly precise methodology. You can't just use simple correlations.
Because that would just tell you what we already suspect, right? When it's hot, people move less.
Precisely. They needed to prove the measure caused the change. That's why they used a causal inference framework, a causal random forest, actually.
Okay.
And that framework lets them estimate the actual policy effect, not just, you know, some associated trend.
That sounds necessary, but there was a spatial detail about their approach that I found even more fascinating.
Absolutely. This is critical. It's how they integrated WorldPop's open high-resolution population data, including the Global 2 data set.
What did that let them do?
They used this data to spatially mask the analysis. So think of it this way. They weren't measuring the temperature of an empty field or a forest where no one lives. They made sure temperature and humidity were only measured in the inhabited areas where people and the mobile devices actually were.
Which prevents all that geographic noise from skewing the results.
It gives you a much clearer picture of actual human exposure.
So let's start with cooling centers. How did they perform?
Well, their effectiveness was highly conditional. During those daytime-only heat waves, they did reduce movement. They acted as a shelter.
Right, a place to hide from the heat.
Exactly. But, and this is critical, they actively promoted mobility during those brutal compound day-night heat waves.
So they weren't just shelters, they were enablers.
Precisely. They were vital staging posts that allowed people to run essential errands, knowing they had a safe, cool refuge to go to.
Which makes this an equity story then, right?
It absolutely is. This promotive effect was strongest in cities with low economic output, in highly aging communities, you know, where 20% or more of the population is elderly, and in agricultural areas.
So in places where private air conditioning is a luxury.
Exactly. It confirms these centers are an essential equity fix.
Okay, so that's infrastructure. But what about urban greenness? We've invested so much in planting trees and parks. Did nature offer the same kind of protection?
And this is one of the more surprising findings. For the most part, urban greenness failed to sustain or promote mobility. The study suggests greenness alone just wasn't enough to overcome the other challenges. We only saw modest benefits in very specific contexts.
Like where?
Younger, less agricultural cities, and mainly during those day-night heat waves. It suggests that for a vulnerable person who needs to get somewhere, a park just isn't a direct replacement for an air-conditioned building. It might be too far, or the shade isn't enough.
That's a powerful distinction. So let's move to the last tool, the simplest one, communication. Heat warnings, did they work?
This is where we saw some paradoxical effects. In younger, less agricultural cities, they had a modest suppressive effect. People got the alert and, you know, stayed home.
That makes sense.
But, and this is the worrying part, in the most vulnerable cities, those high elderly or agricultural areas, mobility actually increased at the most extreme temperatures. We're talking above 38 degrees Celsius.
Wait, an official alert at the most dangerous time made people more likely to go out. That just seems to undermine the entire system.
It does. It suggests that for essential workers or those without cooling at home, the alert just confirms the danger they already have to face. They don't have the luxury of staying home, so they move anyway.
The takeaway then is crystal clear. These adaptation measures are absolutely not one size fits all. They require really precise tailored design.
Yes, based on both the climate type, that day only versus compound heat, and the socioeconomic reality of the people living there.
Right.
Which I think leaves us with a really important question. Given the evidence that these warnings can fail in the most vulnerable areas, what specific actionable interventions must cities enforce, I mean, beyond just issuing alerts, to truly protect outdoor workers and isolated residents?
To read the full journal article, follow the link below.